All right, welcome to this version of The Hours. I'm Tyler, this is Mark. We are Savvy Coaching, and many of you are probably transitioning now into your off season. Our Savvy Coaching community has been asking a lot of questions about how to maximize the off season. And I would propose that the off season is actually where you get better. And so great coaches, savvy coaches, are masters of the off season. So Mark and I are going to take you through our top three things that you should focus on as you go through your off season. We're gonna do it draft style. So if I pick one thing, Mark has to actually pick another and vice versa. So we're really excited about that. But before we dive into it and before we give you a sneak preview of this PDF checklist that Mark has put together for us and for you that we're going to follow up and send you in an email. Mark, what would you say was an indicator of a successful off season for you when you were coaching? Like, how would you measure and know, okay, this was a good off season for us?
Man, that is a good question. The first thing I would do is our off season was always geared towards individual player development, less on team concepts, more on player development. So priority were weight room, skill development, and those were really measurable and tangible that you could see. So that would be one. The next thing I would say is a high sense of clarity on what we had to do moving forward. I think there are three phases that coaches go through in the off season or even preseason. It's number one, we all get really, really optimistic that maybe culture problems are going away next year because X, Y, and Z is changing, or this player is going to be so much better next year, or whatever it is. We're going to be more veteran. So we're really, really optimistic. And then usually as practice starts, game starts, you transition to, well, maybe we're not as good as we thought we were. And then you get this clarity. And a lot of times for coaches, it happens December, January, where it's, okay, this is who we are, and this is what we need to do to win games going forward. Can we speed that process up and get to three, that third approach of this is who we are, this is what we need to do to maximize our potential? Can we have a very clear roadmap to bring us to that realization in the off season?
That's good. Well, okay, before we move on, welcome everyone that is joining us live. I would invite you, as long as you're not driving or operating a lawnmower, please drop into the chat box your name and where you're from. We would love to, there's gonna be a couple of moments throughout this where we're gonna ask you some questions to gauge the audience, but also to hopefully spark and trigger a couple of good thoughts for you. Mark, it actually came back to me. Okay, so I will share this story, and this is why it's so important to do what Mark has titled, and I love your title, Mark, a post-mortem on your season. So often we come out of our season and we feel really, really clear on what we need to do in the off season, right? We're probably frustrated with how our season ended. We might have identified either a culture error or a skill development failure or a system change, right? And we're like, this is the direction that we must go. And we just take off running that direction because we feel that that is definitely the highest leverage thing that we can do. And what a postmortem will actually do, and why we put this big checklist together for you, is so that you can make sure that you can accurately identify the highest leverage things that you can do to improve. And I'll share this story with you. Coach Carr, welcome. TJ, welcome. We'll ask you guys some questions. Please continue to drop your name and where you're from in the area. We got South Carolina. Coach Carr, we're looking at possibly doing a team camp in South Carolina. Stay tuned. Hilton Head, I don't know how close Columbia is to Hilton Head, but stay tuned on that. We're working on a gym for you right there, right in that area. So here's basically the story. There was an Olympic endurance runner that was one of the best endurance runners in the entire world, and they had an unbelievable training regimen. Their diet was excellent, and they went and they competed in the Olympics, and it wasn't a marathon. It's like the next longest one. I can't remember the meters, but it was the next longest one, and they just missed the podium. They just missed medaling. And they were very, very frustrated. And so they went back and they looked at their training regimen and they're like, okay, it absolutely had to be my interval training. They were sure of it. It's like, you know, I didn't perform as well. I didn't interval my training well enough leading up to the Olympics. So then he went and actually met with a high performance trainer that decided to do some testing with this runner. And this is what the high performance trainer did. Put him on an incline treadmill with an oxygen mask on that limited the oxygen and said, this is the most challenging endurance training known to man. Let's see if you can set the world record. Go until you're absolutely exhausted. Go until absolute failure. You can't take another step. You're going to pass out. And it was incline. It was resistance. It was really, really hard. The runner went as hard as he could and said, I'm going to pass out at 22 minutes. I'm paraphrasing a little bit here. At 22 minutes, failed. The very next day, with no additional training, no rest, nothing, he went back to be tested again. And this time, the trainer said, you were almost the world record holder. Just lied to him. You were almost the world record. You barely missed it. You missed it by about 12 seconds. He's like, so this time, I'm going to put the clock up for you. And he lied to him again. He said, you got 28 minutes yesterday when he actually only got 22. He said, you got 28 minutes. If you can get to 28:12, you will be the world record holder on this endurance test. Put the clock up, put the mask on. When the endurance runner hit 22 minutes where they failed yesterday, they started being in pain, massive fatigue, thinking, I can't go on, I can't go on. And yet they did. And the endurance runner got all the way to 28 minutes and 12 seconds in one day with no additional training, no different interval training, nothing, right? Just with an absolute clear laser focused goal on a very small thing that was measurable, then they set the world record. Here's what's crazy. The very next day, again, no rest, again, no additional training. The trainer said, you have the world record. You are the best at this. Let's see if you can set a new record. And I'm going to remove the clock and you just go past your point of failure again, set a new world record. Took the clock away, right back to 22 minutes, tap out. Crazy, right? And then to bring it full circle, the very last iteration said, okay, someone in lied to him again. Someone in some other country heard you beat the world record and yesterday beat it and set it at 29 minutes. Put the clock back on, said, you got to go to 29:01 if you want the world record again. Lo and behold, set the world record. Crazy. It's the 1 mile principle, right? The 4 minute mile principle right there. And the reason I share that story with everybody right now is if we just go into our off season, right, without a laser focus and identifying like this is where we missed the mark, this is the new mark. And if we just assume that we know what we need to work on, we just got to do everything a little bit better. We just got to do everything that we did before a little bit better. You won't actually get better, right? Like that's the only way that when you hit a certain level of performance, you improve is you understand that what got you here won't get you there. And that's what this checklist is about. And Mark and I are going to go through our top three on these. Mark, anything you want to add on that before we do our draft here?
Yeah. So you're saying we should lie to our players, right?
You get it. You get it. Absolutely. There you
go. That's what I took away from it. I'll say this before we dive into the checklist and do our draft here. If you're a James Clear fan or you're a reader and you've read Atomic Habits, you have heard the story of the British cycling team hired a new coach for the Tour de France. And he looked at winning the Tour de France in a way that few coaches do. And that is, let's look at everything that goes into riding a bike and improve 1% in all of those areas. And that's really what this checklist is designed for you to do, is to have no stone left unturned. So it was get a more comfortable seat, have players bring their own pillows on the road. It's a scientific fact that you don't get as much REM sleep when you're sleeping outside of your bed. Unless you have the same smell, the same environment as you can. So bring your own pillow. Let's set the temperature to 65 degrees. Let's improve 1% in 50 different areas and get you know, those aggregate gains are going to add up to a whole lot of progress. That's the goal behind this, is to help you get a very clear vision, an autopsy postmortem of where can we be better. And what I would challenge coaches to do is the little things are not little. So any way that you can gain an advantage, be more efficient, squeeze more potential out of you, your staff, your team, this checklist will help you do it.
Really well said. Okay, before we dive into the checklist, let me ask a couple questions of the live audience. And for those of you that are going to be watching recorded, I would encourage you to verbalize or at least think on your answer now. Just type a Y for yes or an N for no into the chat box. Give us a little bit of feedback. Do you have a written postseason checklist that you go through right now? We just want to know how much value we're adding. This is Y for yes if you currently have one that you use, N for no. And we'd be very interested, just Y enter or N enter, so it can be a quick poll. Do you currently have a written checklist? No one's judging here. This is feedback for us. Do you have one? Y for yes or N for no? I'll monitor that, Mark, and let you know what they say. We'll go like this. For first draft pick of one of these items that we think are, if we had to just pick three, that we think are the three most important, Mark, pick a one or a two. I've got a one or a two behind my back here. You got to trust me on this one. Lie to your teammates. Lie to your one or two. What do you like?
Let's go two.
You're correct. Two is correct. You get the first draft pick. We have so far majority N for no's, Mark. Do not have it. So that is awesome. Kinda. I love it, Coach Carr. We got a kinda. I like how you picked the third door there. So we will be providing this checklist, which I will actually, you want me to screen share it, Mark, or do you want to screen share it?
Why don't you do it?
All right, cool. We'll screen share this. We're going to be providing this checklist to each of you that signed up and put your email in. This is what we are working off of. And just to give a quick sneak preview as well, let me see if that's going to pop up for us here. Just give you a quick sneak preview. We are going to be going through every aspect of this postseason checklist on our upcoming March cohort. For those of you that don't know, every month, Mark and myself take our grow coaches deep diving into what we think they should be focusing on at this time in the season. And that's why we call our membership Grow. It's like you are guaranteed to grow every month if you go through it with us. And what we're going to grow coaches in this month is in their mastering of the offseason, which starts with producing a good postmortem. So you'll be getting this checklist. For all of you that said no before, you're welcome. For those of you that said maybe, it'll maybe be better. For those of you that said yes, maybe it will help. So Market's first draft pick, these are the three, our top three things that we would focus on in the offseason with just a generic team. All right, Mark, first draft pick and why? Oh, and there's more down here as well.
This is tough. I'm going to go under the culture section. I'm going to go standards. Why? Because standards drive behavior, and you can never, you know, culture eats strategy for breakfast, right? So we can never get to where we want to be if our culture isn't right. I had a coach actually reach out and say, hey, what do you think is most important? Culture, talent, system. And I'm like, well, they're all equally important. It's all part of the recipe, but I would start with behaviors. And for me, establishing clear standards as a coach, supporting and enforcing those is the way that you drive behavior.
That was my number two pick. Let me just cross that one off the list right now as off the board.
Well, I'm dying to see what your number one pick was, if that was two.
I debated, and I feel a little bit hypocritical, but I'm going to roll with it. But before we go on to my number one pick, okay, standards. How would I evaluate? So I'm like, okay, did I have them? Yes or no? If no, obvious, establish some. If yes, what are you thinking about on standards? Let's say, like, for example, Mark, what was a standard that you had in a previous program?
We created standards for a lot of different areas in our program. So right now make it applicable for coaches, because you can take this to your next meeting. We're gonna probably gonna have an off-season meeting, right? So before we do anything, let's establish some standards. So, all right, first team meeting for the 2024-2025 team. Gosh, that sounds crazy. What's a great team meeting look like? Everybody's on time. Okay, well, that becomes a standard. No cell phones. Okay, that becomes a standard. We're sitting up in our chair. That becomes a standard. So those would be our three standards for any meeting or film session. And the way you support those before the session, if you see a phone out, just say, hey, Tyler, real quick, remind me of one of our three standards. No cell phones. Well, Jimmy over here realizes his cell phone's out and he puts it away, and they're self-enforcing the standard, you know, peer-to-peer or individually. So that'd be a quick example of a standard in the program.
Great example. I'm just going to quickly turn my cell phone upside down here, as I was not upholding our standard there. I apologize. All right, let me ask. That's so practical and good. Okay, I'm going back to the audience here. Those three standards for team meetings, audience, please type a Y for yes and an N for no. We're going to keep this real simple. We're going to keep it zero or one. Did you have those standards and uphold them throughout your season this last season? You're doing an autopsy right now. Y for yes, N for no. For team meetings, practices, meals, did everyone show up on time with no cell phones, sitting up in their chair engaged? Y for yes, N for no. Again, this isn't to shame or embarrass anyone. This is how we would coach. And what savvy coaching is we have the opportunity to provide coaching to coaches. Beautiful. Steven coming in hot with a yes.
See that. That is amazing. Y in there.
Come on.
Tyler, one thing I would say too is this is how I would structure these conversations with the coaching staff is scale of 1 to 3. How did we do on, you know, maintain or in supporting and enforcing our standards in our meetings? If it's a 2, okay, well, how do we get that to a 3?
Absolutely.
You know, who wants to own that or what's the one category? So this is great practice. This is exactly how to run a staff meeting.
Exactly. And I love how you did say 2 and 3 right there. And I did yes and no just for this situation. But like if we were doing consulting, or if you were one of our courtside consultants working with Mark or myself individually, we often like to use a 4-point scale. And I would encourage you to consider using that even with your players and your staff. 4 is it's the gold standard, right? Like we're fully upholding it. 3 is going to be like most of the time we uphold it. A 2 is going to be we're slightly below the standard. It's occasional. And then 1 is hardly ever. And that gives a little bit more texture and nuance, and it eliminates, like on a scale of 1 to 5 or 1 to 10, it eliminates the middle ground. You got to say we're above or below the line, which is what a standard is. We're above or below the line.
Also, if you use the 4-point scale or any scale and you find that 1 becomes just the default, I would suggest eliminating a number in there. So you could maybe go 1 to 5, but can't say 3. Mm-hmm. Or you really got to draw a hard line of a 4 is pretty good and a 2 is not so good. So I had a coach that was recruiting one of my players. He said, hey, 1 to 10, how competitive is he? But you can't say 7 or 8. Thought that was really
good. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, because 9 or 10 is a whole nother level. And you got to think, like, do you really think this dude's competitive?
And then 6 is like, like slightly above average competitiveness, you know? Yeah. But it's hard to give someone a 9.
And that's so good, too, because as a coach, I'm assuming that maybe they were recruiting that player. If they're not a 9 or a 10, you don't want anything to do with them.
Yep.
You know, whereas if they said Nate, you're like, oh, maybe I could help him out. But it just eliminates, like, the maybes. That's so good. Brian Ziegler, I hope I said your last name right. Brian made a point that for them, coaches having no phones also. Yes, I know. I mean, you can't give away what you don't possess. Absolutely. And of course, there's going to be some exceptions, but I would just encourage coaches to say like, hey, I'm waiting on an important call for whatever scheduling or my wife's pregnant. Just acknowledge it, which I think also we would make that same exception for a player. I mean, I know this isn't where we're going, but I will just share this as well on standards. One of my favorite statements that I heard Coach K say was, rules are for leaders afraid to make decisions. Standards aren't rules. It's different. Like a rule would be, if you ever miss practice, you will never play in the next game. That would be a rule. Whereas a standard is, we show up early for practice. Now, if, you know, we'll use Jimmy again. If Jimmy's mom is, you know, getting off late from work and she had a terrible day at work and Jimmy's ride is his mom, and so he's 10 minutes late for practice one time, and Jimmy, we know, is a committed player and everyone understands that. He acknowledges and is taking ownership of it. Well, if you have this rule, then all of a sudden you're punishing the rest of the team if he's one of your better players for something out of his control completely. So like, I think rules, standards are different than rules, which I think is important for us all to understand as well. All right, is it time for my draft pick, Mark?
I can't wait.
All right. I actually selected something that is not on the list for my number one, but it is related to the list. I'll scroll down here as we talk about team, okay? I looked at team, and I'm actually just going to change some language for my number one draft pick. I think it is the number one way to master your off season. And I am going to say it is player development. And I use player development intentionally beyond skill development. I believe that skill development is a part of player development. And I will say this. The quickest path, or the shortest path rather, maybe not the quickest, the shortest path to a better team is better players, period. And that's why I did edge out standards in my mind, because a team of unbelievable players will still beat a team of mediocre players with unbelievable standards. And that is, if we're trying to, okay, we're going performance first, and, you know, I don't know, I could be argued off this, and, you know, have a team with better standards is better overall experience and more enjoyable. Yep. But I would still beat you if I had a team of better players. And so that is why player development is my number one. And here's the key difference to me of player development over skill development, or instead of skill development. Three aspects of it. One, it's the whole person and player. And so having an actual plan to develop a person's leadership, personal habits, mindset, approach, everything, I think is equally important to just, we got to get this kid shooting better. And so I think that's maybe something that's missed a little bit. And I believe we have a responsibility as coaches and leaders. And in many of these players' lives, we are the most influential voice, even beyond their parents. Sometimes at this age, we're the most influential. I mean, we all as coaches have had a parent say, and it's actually, you know, just parent short-sightedness often. Like, I tell my kid the same thing you do, but they listen to you. Right. But like, there is some truth to that though. And so if we're only using our influence to make them a better shooter, I think that's grossly irresponsible of us as leaders. So player development, the whole player. The second part, so that'd be one. The second part of player development, why I cheated on my own game, is that I think player development includes IQ, and I believe that skill development often forgets it. This player's become a better ball handler, but they don't know how or when to use dribble moves. Right? This player's become a better finisher, but they try to finish against really tough defenders and take bad shots. So I think that player development includes IQ, not just the skill piece. And so that's why I think is an important aspect to consider and why I use it. And then the last part of player development is what I think it just kind of rolls in the separate piece, which is just the social development of the team as well. Which, you know, we've all heard this language before, I think. But I think it's really true, as I've had the opportunity to coach women's college basketball and men's college basketball. I've trained men's high school, college, and professional players, and I've trained women's. And there is a significant difference. I don't think that you need to coach these two, the two genders different. But I do think being aware of this key difference is very, very important. And it really is a social difference. You probably heard this, is most women women need to bond before they battle. Whereas for guys, they need to battle before they bond. And so like that really is just a social piece. And we've all seen it play out so many times. And so when you're developing players, I think you also have to develop the social aspect of that player as well, and that player with the team. Otherwise, you're just going to have a group of individuals. So I put all that into player development. I probably cheated by smashing it together. Okay, what's your second pick, Mark?
Oh, I'm going to go to operations and go to gear. I'm a huge gear guy.
No, come on, let's go. I did not expect gear. That is a dark horse pick.
And that is actually not my pick. That is
okay. I thought you were going to Nikola Jokic in the second round draft pick and then, you know, tie it back into like, you know, banners and whatnot.
No, I wish. I'm going to go, gosh, this one's tough because I could really just live in this culture section for all three of these, but I'm going to go outside of that and I'm going to cheat too. I'm just going to go with practice planning / design. Not that it's super applicable right now in the off season, because again, we're focused more on individual skill player development, right? Your number one draft pick. Mm-hmm. But I think that is an area that a lot of coaches can improve in, but fail to self-reflect and refine that system. I feel like practices look the exact same year to year. And along with player development, the number one thing that you have over control of your team is what you do and how you do it in practice every day. So I always think you can improve and should look to improve in that area.
Really good. I was reading the Talent Code recently, and one of the teaching methods that was indicative of all these talent hotspots all over the world, chess, musician, soccer, all this stuff, was this teaching method, which I'm committed to using more. And coaches, I would encourage you to consider using more as well. Here's how you do it right. Here's how you get it wrong. Here's how you do it right. And reiterating that. And there's a lot of neuroscience behind it, but I will attempt to use that right now as a reminder on practice planning, for my opinion. And then Mark, you can edit me or share your thoughts on this. In my opinion, practice planning done right is adjusted moment to moment and day to day. So identifying this is what this group, this team needs right now, and that's how I'm going to design this practice. Practice planning done wrong is I've got this binder of practice plans that I've used for the last 10 seasons. And this is practice plan number 27. And I've got to use this one because I got to do something different than what I did the day before. That's practice planning done wrong. It doesn't take into account the moment in time, the personnel, you know, what the most important thing is that you need to learn, the feeling of the team, the energy level, if it's like a red or a green practice, if you need like high physical intensity or high mental engagement. It doesn't take into account all of those things. And that's the art of coaching. You know, the science of coaching is I've got this massive sheaf of practice plans. I got to share this. Okay. And this is also coaching interviews done wrong. I had the honor of sitting on an interview panel for a high school coach recently. And there were three candidates that came in. They were the three finalists. The first two candidates came in with their coaching portfolio. This is everything that I've done, right? This is my philosophy. Look at what I've built over my career. Fine. Okay. Third candidate came in and had just a completely different frame and said, this is the team that he was applying for. This is the personnel we have coming in next year. This is the key opponent we have to beat in order to move up and make the next level of playoffs. This is the main area that we need to improve. He actually shared a plan for that specific team in that moment of time moving forward that was a product of all of his, you know, resume. Who do you think got the job? The one with the plan. Immediately, it was easy, right? So like your resume is not as important as your plan. And I think that I would apply that as well to, you know, practice planning as well, right? Like what you've done in the past is not as important as what you need to do right now. So I love that one. That one also didn't make my list, or that one did not make my list, but I'm glad it did for you. Okay, here's mine. Number two pick. Also not on the list, but a big part of strength and conditioning. And I would say that it is directly related to strength, stamina, load management, injury management, off-season and pre-season and in-season habits. So all across the board, but it would be spanning that. Sleep and nutrition. I believe doing an autopsy and evaluating the execution of proper sleep habits of your team and nutrition habits of your team and improving that. Mark talked about the 1%. I mean, that might be a 20%er, honestly. If you haven't read the studies done on Andre Iguodala when he was with the Golden State Warriors of his field goal percentage and turnover rate when he got over 8 hours of sleep or less than 6 hours of sleep, it is shocking. I believe, if memory serves, it was about a 20% difference in his effective field goal percentage just based on sleep. And I think he had like three times as many turnovers per 36 minutes. Unbelievable. And if you were to look at most high school players' sleep and nutrition habits, they are atrocious. Yep. Atrocious. And so establishing a plan and really doing an autopsy on what were your players' sleep and nutrition habits and establishing a plan going forward, I think would be a massive gain that most teams are not making.
That one's great. I think that is something I'm really passionate about, is like getting enough sleep, eating right. If I think of my high school self, man, I was really, really far off of where I am now. But I think that goes to player development, is teaching them good habits at an early age that they can take for the rest of their life. We had the conversation. One thing, well, I'll give a practical example here on just nutrition or hydration. Every day, last drill of practice, all of my players had a clear water bottle. This is British cycling team. We all had a clear water bottle so I could see how much water they were drinking throughout practice. But our managers could also see, hey, he's almost empty. Let me go fill his up before he's empty. But during the last drill or game at practice, the manager would fill all of them up and you couldn't go to the locker room until yours was empty. So if you wanted to get extra shots up, if you wanted the static stretch, if you just wanted to hang out, the social element, hang out with your teammates, we just hung out and drank water every single day after practice. So that would be a practical standard or just part of your ritual routine that you could make with your team to help with the hydration piece, because no one else is doing that. But
that's really good.
Outside of that, really, really difficult for coaches to control sleep hydration, right? But education, really important. One thing I would always say is I'd go to my players and say, hey, are you going to get 8 hours of sleep tonight? You know, yeah, coach. Okay. Well, what time do you have to go to sleep in order to get 8 hours of sleep? And they would have no idea. So if you actually get them to track their sleep, they're probably getting far less sleep than they think. And that might be the first step, is just raising some awareness of how much sleep they're actually getting. Most of the time, if they tell you, I went to sleep at midnight, that means they turned their phone off or started to get in bed at midnight, and they probably went to sleep at 1 or 2 a.m.
Yeah. Okay, so agreed. So there's a really cool product. I'll actually drop the link in. I'll drop the link into our Savvy Coaching community of a sleep nutrition journal. And we actually recently, Mark, had one of our community coaches asking for a book suggestion for their team for the off season, which is good. But I would actually argue that a more impactful book to get your team this off season would actually be a sleep and nutrition journal, where every day they actually track, like you had said, but it's there. They track their sleep and they write down everything they ate. Measurement is magic. Just them doing that. And then you can throw in some other things, like every Tuesday before practice, you partner them up and they actually have to read it to a partner. And every Friday it's random check. And coach can walk up to anyone's Strength Nutrition Journal and read it out in front of everyone. And if they left it blank, even better. Right. And there, you can have some sort of a consequence for that. So, I mean, that would be another way that you can actually have an impact on that, with a lot of like self peer accountability and even coach accountability as well. So I'll drop that link. It's a cheap one. If you got that for your team, I think you're probably taking a 1% step in improving their sleep and nutrition. All right, Mark, draft pick number, we've really gone off book here. But I think that's also what this checklist is for. Is it's going to trigger things for you that like, okay, when I think about our late clock situations, it actually means that we need to improve this other aspect of our practice planning or whatever. But if you don't go through every aspect of the checklist, you'll assume that you know and think you're doing everything you do to be the best endurance runner in the world, but you haven't actually done the thing. And so we're just trying to leave no stone unturned here.
All right. So my third draft pick. This one's tough. I'm actually going to go in the miscellaneous category. Ooh, and I'm going to go with language and terminology, because I think this one's great for the off season. Having a clear language or your own, you know, dialect within your program, really, really important for a ton of different categories. Like your standards could become sticky language, or your core values could become sticky language. For example, like some of our core values might be hardworking. If I was a coach today, for me, that would be take the stairs. Just something easy we can remember. If it's on a shirt, if it's on social media, it's kind of a, hey, what does that mean? You know? Another one would be team unity, you know, or teamwork, brother, you know, that would be together we attack for us. And it's just like a mantra that your players, your fans, parents can hold on to. It's sticky. It'll stay with them, but also clarifying your terminology of your system. Can we clean up our language? Can we, simplicity wins, right? How can we provide clarity? How can we make complex ideas really, really simple through terminology? I think that's a great off-season project for coaches.
Really good. Let me go back to the group on that one. And I'll just ask the group, if you're watching live or if you're watching recorded, if you've got one piece of sticky or unique terminology, just drop it into the community chat. Most of, like, take the stairs, for example. I stole that from someone. I can't remember who. But most of the sticky terminology I've stolen from someone, very little of it has been like just from my own head. And so one of the things you can do is let's steal from each other right now. There's nothing new in the game of basketball. There's just a better way to frame it, train it, or, you know, measure it. That's it. And so let's drop some sticky terminology in right now. Mark, let's actually popcorn two or three that we've used that we think are unique and sticky and what they actually mean. What's one that you use a lot that you think is really sticky? I know you gave a couple standards one, but let's just go open season.
Okay, I'll go a common question or something we always had to coach against was getting players to hold their spot in the corner. So sticky language would be chill before fill.
That's good. Cool. One that we use instead of drive is we use hunt. It's just a lot more intentional. Like you're hunting something, you're hunting an advantage, you're hunting a nine, you're hunting the smile, a spot on the floor, you're hunting the world. Like let's go hunt something as opposed to just explore. You know, a lot of times we get frustrated with players just exploring with their dribble. So I say hunt, 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 and it just becomes more intentional.
I like it. I'll go another one here. This is, you've probably heard this one. This isn't earth shattering, but it's top of mind. How we get players to hunt would be what process do we go through before putting it on the floor? We always said shoot it, drive it, or move it. And that helped train our 0.5. and you can define Claire roles by manipulating the order of shoot it, drive it, or move it.
Love it. Steven just dropped in David and Goliath. Anytime that we've got a guard versus a big on the perimeter. Love it. I heard another one recently. I can't remember who said it. They said crack the shell. Oh, it was Carlos. Coach Carlos, one of our savvy members. And he said crack the shell, which is just another way to say, let's get the ball inside the arc. Right. Yep. You know, another one is like race instead of like so many coaches. And I'm coaching actually my coaches here locally on this. Like whenever our team gets a rebound or a steal, they're like, go. Like, no, don't go. Race. And that's sticky language because they're actually trying to win the race against an opponent and get behind them. Go tends to turn into run to your spot and stop. And so it's just different in sticky language. Like it's a race. So Jeff has one here. Easy means free to help. Sticky means you can stunt or skirmish is one that we use, but don't get too far. Married means no help. So we got easy, sticky, and married as far as how they should be in their help. I like that, Jeff. That's good stuff.
I love that.
So we're often asked for this, and actually Steven's asking for this right now, about like a written out definition of all of our different roles. And so each of you, as part of your mastering the off season, if you could actually put together your sticky language into a document to then provide to your coaches and to your team, that would be a way to master the off season and really develop your vocabulary. Any final thoughts from you on that one, Mark?
Yeah, I think your example on go versus race, really, really good. I know one thing, in the race and space or just shooting in general, we talk about nines and sevens.
Mm-hmm.
This was all spawned by me saying language terminology to clean up. We want to be very, very consistent top to bottom. And one thing we could steal from this checklist is program alignment. What that means mm-hmm. is from varsity all the way down to our feeder systems is an open layup called a nine at the varsity level, the freshman level, the sixth grade level, because we want or don't want is one coach saying a nine, another coach saying a wide open shot, and another coach calling it an easy layup. Let's just be very, very consistent, which is going to expedite all of your progress top to bottom.
Absolutely. Okay, I'm pulling up something to make that point very heavily. So let me screen share this. I know that there are some real challenges with program alignment in feeder programs. I've spoken to the coaches. Mark, you've spoken to the coaches as well. I can't imagine a more important battle to fight than that one, to align your program all the way down to the feeder programs. This is a marathon. And, you know, if there's resistance, if there's conversations, if there's truth that needs to be told, if there's convincing and persuasion, it's imperative. Specifically, and I did ask, I just got sent this by one of our savvy programs. They asked to remain anonymous because they're trying to not give away their secrets. But we've been working with this program. I just shared this with our team. We've been working with this program for the last 2 years. And 2 years ago, this program actually convinced their feeder programs to align on how we teach shooting specifically. And shooting, as we all know, is one of the most guarded things that coaches have. Like, here's how I teach shooting. You know, here's how I teach shooting. That's the worst thing you can do for shooting development. If every coach that they play for or work with tries to imprint their different shooting emphasis or philosophy, that is a guarantee that a player will not improve their shooting. I don't even care if you teach what we teach about shooting, but if you can align your whole program to teach players to shoot like Reggie Miller, they're going to become better shooters. If you can align, maybe not Bill Cartwright, but if you can just align on something where everyone's teaching the same things, you're going to see improvement. So for example, here, we've been doing this for 2 years. So like year one, you can see is right before we instituted program-wide shooting. And you can see the improvement for at all levels of the program. And obviously C team is going to include the feeders that are coming in from middle school. At all levels of the program, from two, from three, from free throw, just improvement. You would love to have this improvement. Well, the quickest way to have that improvement is to align your language and philosophy on shooting, no matter what it is. If you want to improve it even faster than that, I would encourage you to use our Savvy Shooting System, which is available in our membership as well. So I just love what you said about alignment there, Mark. I know we're here at the end of time. I can give my last one real quick, and then maybe you can summarize and send us out of here and kind of tell them what we're going to be doing over the cohort for the next 4 weeks. Cool. All right, my last one. I'm gonna zig a little bit here at the end as well, and just be real brief on this one. Mental performance. Every great player in every sport has said that their edge is mental. No great player in any great sport has said, well, I'm just the best only because of my physical attributes. No one has said that. Even LeBron, whose edge is his physical attributes, his greatest edge, and he said it, is his mind, right? And so if that is the edge of all great players and great teams, what are we doing in our programs, in our offseason to improve our mental toughness, our ability to focus, our resilience, our emotional regulation? What are we doing for that? And that's what checklists are for. They're to identify things that are commonly missed or overlooked. And so I would encourage you to consider that as well this offseason.
Awesome. Yeah. Wrapping this up, I find it interesting that none of us, or neither one of us, picked anything in this middle category, which is systems. So the middle category, as Tyler pulls it up, it's your system, your offense, defense, rebounding, special situations, and that includes your blobs, your slobs, which is questions we might get the most about, but neither one of us had. It's not in the top six. Not that it's not important. That is just the blueprint, and I think it's a big piece of what you do, right? Can you have a flawed system or a system that's not conducive for winning and win? Maybe if you have the absolute best players, you could. But the blueprint is just one piece of it. I think what we offer in these cohorts and in the Grow membership and in our in-person, whether it's a clinic or a team camp, is equipping you with way more than just what to do. It's how to do it. So the tools as a coach to facilitate all these things, right? To maximize your team in practice or in meetings, build culture. That's all part of our Savvy Grow model membership. And it's also something that you can get in person as well, which we'll talk about. Before we do that, here's what we're going to be doing over the next month with our off-season or mastering the off-season cohort. Week one, we're going to focus on your end of season, your post-mortem, which much of what we covered today, we'll go into some sections of how we would review our culture and how we would do a self-scout of our program. Week two will be staff development, which we didn't pick. I was really tempted for my third pick to pick something with staff development because, you know, you influence people who influence your players and all those things. Week three will be system development, which will get to, you know, your offense, defense, rebounding systems. And then that will drive your player development piece. So maybe the most important piece out of here, but I think you got to begin with the end in mind. So we'll end with player development in our cohort. Tyler, anything you want to piggyback on that?
Yeah, I just dropped the link in the chat box for you if you want to join us. Anyone that's a Grow member gets to spend 1 hour a week live with Mark and myself. And I think one of the reasons why I didn't go into systems is because I don't yet know you and your situation. And that's what we're going to be doing on our live calls once a week. We're going to talk to you. A cohort is a group, and we're going to take a group of coaches through this. And it's not going to be just listen to us talk like you did today. We ask you questions and you ask us and we help you identify. You're like, man, you know, we really struggle turning the ball over on offense. And I'm just not sure if it's a player development issue or if it's a system issue. Well, tell us a little bit about your system. Okay, well, tell us a little bit about your players, and then we can help direct you. That's what we do here at Savvy Coaches. We can help give you some ideas. We get to be on your staff and direct you to some suggestions. So I look forward to doing that with you. And also, reminder, we are filling up on our in-person schedule. We actually went over it yesterday, me, Mark, and our teammate, Claire, and June is full. And so the only way to get with us in June now is going to be to attend one of our team camps, but we have windows. They're filling up quickly. Email us, DM us. We would love to come work with your program because that would be a great way to master your offseason as well. Mark, bring us home.
Yeah, I have FedEx logo here. I'll leave that hanging for you just for a second. I want to piggyback on what Tyler said. Bring us in for our in-person clinics. June booked. But biggest impact we can make is working directly with you and your athletes, and being on the floor, in the trenches, in your program, because we can move from a coach consultant role to a facilitator. And I would have people come in and watch my practices and spend time with my program. And it made me see things in a completely different way that I did not know existed. And I was able to take that knowledge and piggyback that, and really my growth and development as a coach was exponential from that point on. So I have the FedEx logo up here. Reason why, and I just learned this not long ago, but in between the E and the X here, there's an arrow that I've never seen before. And that is what in-person clinics and team camps have done for me personally as a coach, is I see things completely different after having someone come in and work with me and my team. Completely changed the game for me, and we hope to change the game for you.
That's awesome. We do. I'm Tyler. That's Mark. We are Savvy Coaching, and we look forward to spending more time with you sometime soon. Thanks for hanging out.